But
your legacy status here is, you might have to have a couple more years because of
Welcome to the Exploring Washington State podcast. Here's your host, Scott Cowan.
Welcome back to this episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast. My guest today is Chelsea Dunkley. Chelsea is the co-founder of Digs Co., along with your husband. And today we're going to be talking to Chelsea kind of about what Digs Co. does, and it's short-term rental housing and consulting, and kind of your story. So Chelsea, welcome. Thank you for taking the time. And why don't you introduce yourself better than that to our audience?
Yeah, will do. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me. I'm Chelsea. My husband and I operate Digs Co., which is, as Scott mentioned, short-term vacation rentals. We do consulting and co-hosting, which is similar to property management. And my husband is a full-time real estate agent. So we are kind of like the full spectrum of the transaction to operation process for homes, but he also does other investments and other primary residences and everything, so it's kind of a fun thing to be in business with him. A little about me: I'm from Colorado originally, actually. Moved up here in 2004.
So you're not quite school. Native status. You got to be here 20 years to get grandfathered in. So you're close.
But I think, don't you think it counts that I've been here now half my life? I feel like that's when that, pendulum swings.
That does help. But it's still a 20-year requirement. But yeah,
okay.
You're going to make
fair
it.
Enough.
You'll be okay.
Fair enough. I'll be here. So I came up in 2004 for school. I went to Seattle Pacific University.
So let me interrupt you. Why Seattle Pacific from Colorado? I think of Seattle Pacific and PLU and it is schools primarily that Washington State residents go to, just like there's probably schools in Colorado that are similar. So what was your reasoning from an academic standpoint, or was it athletics or?
No, I actually came, I have family in the Yakima Canyon, and just coming up and visiting them.
You do.
I loved coming to Seattle. I thought it was the coolest city and really kind of wanted to sprout my own wings a little bit, just launch on my own and have some independence. My alternate school was CU Boulder, which is beautiful, and I love that campus. And I'm a Buffs fan, so I love that. But
your legacy status here is, you might have to have a couple more years because of
So. We're full blown Huskies now. We are purple all the way. So don't worry about that. Right. I loved Seattle, and I think when visiting my grandparents and my aunt and uncle, it felt like home all the time, regardless of how often I had been here. So I chose Seattle Pacific. They came to my school. I think I had a bunch of graduates and classes above me that came to that school, and I just sort of zoned in on it. I'm sort of a all in type person. So once I had that in my head, I didn't even apply to any other schools. And I ended up, my second choice was CU Boulder, but ended up just getting in and being excited about that. Academically, it's definitely a great school. I was going to be in the music program originally, and then I realized I had zero interest in a musical profession that wouldn't involve, obviously being famous, which I was really close. Not at all. But I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't want to do any of that. So I ended up doing the obvious route, which is a major in Spanish and European studies, which I use absolutely zero of now today.
I can see the correlation between music and not that it's bad. I don't mean like that, but like, so you go thinking you're going to be in the music program and you end up in Spanish and in European studies. What was the inspiration there?
Oh, my little romantic heart just thought, I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to see everything. oh crap, how am I going to do this? I have to study something in Europe. And the options at the time were European studies Spanish or European studies, I want to say French. And I took Spanish. I was in the international baccalaureate program in middle school and in a Spanish program in high school. And so I thought, well, I already have a little bit of a leg up there. We'll just do that route. And went to Spain for a summer, and that was beautiful. I did a semester in London and traveled Europe. So I hit my goals there, but in life, that really didn't pan out to much at all.
So let me jump ahead. What was your first job out of college then?
Commercial real estate.
Yeah, I could see that European studies really helped you with that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So this is a message to the youth. Maybe plan a little bit better and don't put all your eggs in one basket. Diversify your portfolio, so to speak.
So, because I also have a real estate background, I have to ask, because this is what I jokingly say. You know, when you were a little kid, when I was a little kid, when everybody was a little kid, they didn't play, you know, we played, you know, Cowboys and Indians or whatever, right? Nobody played real estate agent in their backyard. Nobody said, welcome to my open house playhouse. Please come in and have a cookie. Please, may I show you my 2-bedroom treehouse with a rope swing? Nobody. So I jokingly say we all kind of fail our way into real estate because nobody plans to go into it.
That's pretty accurate.
I think it'd be really funny to see, you know, some little kid dressed up like a real estate agent, you know, with a little mock briefcase or something and going, hi, welcome to my Playmobil. May I take you to tour my treehouse in my car? Can we pedal over here?
I mean, you're
nowadays
not wrong
we go
there.
In our own cars. Yeah. Right. So nowadays we go in our own cars. So the kid has to bring his big wheel over to drive over to the tree to go up and open the lockbox in the tree.
Anyway, right. Exactly. Yes, it's a leap.
How did the commercial door open?
Well, I think you're a product of your environment, right? So my dad is a commercial broker. My grandfather is a commercial broker.
Okay.
And it's one of those things I think no one expected me to go in it. I didn't have like the familial pressures of you're going to take on the family business. There was absolutely zero of that. In fact, my dad tried to talk me out of getting into commercial real estate when I first said I had this job. And he said, ooh, I really don't know that you want to do this. But 2008 Chelsea was a very different version than 2022 Chelsea. So, you know, I think it was 2008. So I'm looking at this, I'm graduating from college. I'm looking around me, everything's collapsing. Everybody's getting, you know, kicked out of there. And for me, you know, I was in commercial real estate. So my tenants were not losing their homes. They were losing their businesses. So it was, you know, I think I was kind of like, oh, I got to snag this job before I don't have an opportunity. And it ended up honestly being the most amazing experience. I worked for a boutique company in downtown Bellevue, and my direct supervisor, my boss, she's probably one of the smartest people I've ever met to this day. So I learned more from that job and I was there for, I think, 6 or 7 years. I learned more from that job, probably than any other job that I've had. So it was good. It was good. So, and you pull from all those things.
So you were there in commercial real estate for 6 or 7 years. So we're up to 2015 or so, what the economy had kind of improved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it did. I got into real estate in 2006. So, you know, I jumped on the roller coaster right before the crash.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what you don't know. So you just do what you do. And I watched a lot of people that I was like, well, they seemed really successful. Look, they were driving that Mercedes and they had a Lexus and a Corvette. And where'd they go? They're working at Starbucks.
I know.
At Starbucks. What? And then other people were just, you know, blissfully doing well because no matter what, people are buying and selling real estate. And, you know, no matter what the market's going up or market's going down, there's still transactions to be had and you have to adapt.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you meet your husband because of work?
I did. So actually I met him, I'll back up a little bit. We met in 2007. I was a junior in college, finishing my junior year. And it was like, I can't even tell you how stereotypical that was for SPU. The ring by spring or your money back was the unofficial tagline of the school. So I definitely fell into that category, which
I've never heard that one before.
You've never heard that. Well,
no, I always hear the MRS degree, you know,
the MRS degree. We call it the ring by spring or your money back.
That's awesome. Brought to you by K Jewelers. Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, it was, I successfully, achieved that degree. Let's see. I got married the summer after I graduated from college. So,
okay.
We met through his sister, and his sister was working for a mortgage lender whose wife worked for the company that I ended up working for. So it was a word of mouth. My you know, soon to be sister-in-law is graduating from school. Oh, well, what's her degree in?
Spanish. She's great. Perfect.
Perfect. Definitely use that. I mean, it's one of those jobs. It was property management, so I wasn't doing transactions or leasing, but you know, it's like a really fancy name for you're the grunt worker. So
you get to wear nice looking clothes.
Exactly, which I couldn't even afford at that time. So that was fun. Yeah, so I mean, in that industry, and gosh, what a crazy time that was, just to, you know, see developments going on and working with developers in the area and, you know, being in charge of these multi-million dollar budgets. And it was nuts.
We keep calling him your husband. Why don't we say his name is Luke? So that,
his name is Luke.
We can call him.
He has a name.
Yeah. We can identify him a little bit better.
He might be feeling a little bit. A little bit.
So Luke, we apologize for ignoring you to this point officially.
Yes.
So what happened? So 2015-ish, give or take, you left that job. What did you go into then?
I left. I had my second child. So I guess it would have been, 20. Yeah, around that area, around that time, 2013. So I guess I was there for five or so years. Okay. All right. In my head, it felt like 15.
I understand.
So I had my second child, and I had every aspiration to try to stay home and just be mom for a little bit. I knew I would go back into the work field, but so I left with the mindset that, no, I think I'm just going to be home with the kids for a little bit. And then another job opportunity arose, which was also in property management. And I think I was there for 9 months and then realized it was a very different version of property management. It was like warehouse management. It wasn't really my shtick. And then was recruited again to a very big firm, an international firm. And at that point, I think I just realized property management is not for me. It's, you know, real estate in and of itself is great and I love it. I have obviously a super big passion for it, but the property management side is very thankless. It's, you're constantly, I think, trying to legitimize your seat at the table, especially in a bigger firm. And it was really hard for me just being, you know, a petite blonde girl and not being taken seriously by a lot of these big guys. And so I went off to the world of the tech industry, which was also which
makes perfect sense with a degree in Spanish.
Exactly. Okay. Can you see how just sequential my life has been? It's been obvious.
It's a very linear path. It's so predictable.
So predictable.
Okay. So the tech industry.
So I got lured in by the, you know, hey, you can work your own hours and have all the, like, you think I was a teenager, like,
as going, long as it's 24 hours a day, you can work any hour you want.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a startup. So it, you know, you're wearing all the hats and you're, which I actually obviously still don't mind because I'm essentially my own startup now. But it's very different when it's for someone else and you're not in control of, you know, kind of the end result and the end game. There was actually, do you remember, let's see, this would have been in 2016, I think. There was a hot second where there was an app called List, LI.ST. It was actually developed by BJ Novak.
I'm drawing blanks on both of
those. From The Office. He's the actor. this list was an app where you could like create these. It was almost kind of like a Substack, like a mini version of a Substack. And you could create these things and they could go viral. And I had my first ever and only viral post. And it was my experience working in a tech company, in a tech startup. And I basically just poked fun of the entire process. And it resonated with everyone because it just, it's hilarious. Have you ever worked in tech before?
I have.
So, you know, when, you know, when you're being, you know, called into a meeting or a one-on-one with your direct supervisor and they're sitting on a beanbag, it's really hard to take them seriously. Or they're pumping the beer keg, you know, at 3 o'clock when everyone's playing ping pong behind you. Right. So
my story that I'll share for this episode is that I got called into a meeting to discuss the food for the next meeting.
That's, you know, who else is going to do that? It's important stuff. Those orders aren't going to place themselves.
I just didn't understand. At that point I realized that, I realized I was unemployable because I knew I wasn't going to change and I knew corporate cultures weren't going to change either. And so, keep thinking that the workplace would change to support me was, I realized how naive and wrong I was. And, so then I took some time off from work to, my son moved in with me at that time. And then I took one last stab in the nonprofit world, which is, you know, translation for poor pay corporate.
Okay.
Which it really wasn't. But anyway, and then I still, and then I went complete self-employment in, I don't know, 2005.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. I mean, that's a really interesting realization. And I'm, even as you're saying that out loud, the, I'm unemployable. That's exactly the sentiment that I had after these,
and
this little journey.
You can say it like you're defective, but
yeah, I didn't take it that way. That was just a very resounding, like, this is, I'm a square peg and trying to fit into too many round holes.
I, you know, I don't, like you said, you know, it's hard to take your the leader seriously, who you're talking to, whether pumping a keg or playing ping pong or sitting on a beanbag or deciding whether it's bagels or muffins for a meeting. It just, it's like, it's not important to what we're doing, is it? And then at the same time, culture is very important. You know, you don't want to work in a place that's, you know, miserable.
Yeah, you know, like exactly.
Like a factory or, you know, a warehouse job. I mean, in those jobs need to be done. I'm just not a fit for there either. So,
100% agree. And each of these things, I took so many great, amazing takeaways I never would have ever learned on my own.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, and the thing is that there are people that are, you know, absolutely love the security of a time clock, if you will, going in, punching out, and they don't think about work the minute that the time card's punched, right? I think that's a little outdated reference, but you know, they're done. It's 5:05. I'm off until the morning. I don't think about my job until I pull into the parking lot in the morning. Mm-hmm. I was never like that. It consumed my thinking all the time, and I was always frustrated that, well, why don't they do it this way? We could be better, but you know, and so
yeah.
I just realized that, well, that company's very successful the way they are. I'll go do it my way somewhere else and make myself happier.
Right. Well, anyway. Right.
So you do this and then
something's curious. At the front door.
Yeah, somebody have a guest.
Not this house, different house.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, okay. Yes. So actually that's a great transition. So a doorbell rang at another house. That's technology is amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
So when did you guys buy your first rental property? And your first rental property, was it a traditional rental property? Like we're going to rent it out to somebody on and have a 12-month lease or a duplex, blah, blah, blah. Or did you just get started doing the short-term stuff right away?
Okay. So I'll back up a little bit from that. So I got laid off from my tech job. And regardless of my square peg round hole status, it's a blow. It's a total blow to your ego, blow to your, you know, entire vision of yourself. And at that time, my husband and I, Luke and I, were actively flipping homes, kind of like in our spare time. So we were going to the auction block downtown Seattle. We were buying up homes. We were rehabilitating them. It's nothing like it was not sexy. It was like carpet and paint, you know, nothing like mind blowing, you know, that you see on HGTV.
You weren't knocking walls out and reconfiguring the floor plan of a house.
Chip and Joe never came by. I mean, I asked, but they just were a little busy in Waco. So yeah, we were doing that on the side, and this was literally like on our nights and weekends. Mm-hmm. At one point we were living in a couple of our flips before, and my husband would get home from our respective jobs. Luke would get home, and I would be upstairs, you know, paying bills or doing stuff, and he would be literally downstairs shoveling dirt into a 5-gallon bucket. We were creating a basement from a crawl space in one of our homes. So this was something, it was a little bit crazy, and I don't know how we survived that, but I guess it made us stronger.
So just out of curiosity, you know, I got this vision that you just described, that Luke's down there, maybe with like a miner's thing on his head and a light, and he's
couple beers, yeah.
Well, yeah, but here's where I go with this. So he's down there, and he fills up a couple of 5-gallon buckets of dirt, and he brings them out, and he's dumping them in the yard. Do the neighbors ever think you were burying bodies down there? I mean, it does seem a little sketchy. You know, what's this guy doing? Yeah. He's dirty, you know.
Valid point, actually. Probably they did. We had a pit bull at the time too, so no one was brave enough to come by and ask any questions.
They just knew. They just go, we don't want to know.
Yeah, anymore. We don't just ask. Okay. Don't ask. So we were doing that, and when I lost that job, I ended up going. The next day, I think we were scheduled to go to the auction, and you know, I'm all sad and, you know, mopey about it and have a bad attitude. We go, we buy this place, and we just went, okay, fine, this will be my job now. I'll just do this full time and fine. And, you know, I had such a terrible attitude about it. And
well, you're digging dirt out and hauling out a 5-gallon pail. Nobody wants to do that.
Well, I wish that was the case, but these were like really, really bad houses that people left in really gross states.
That's what I do. That's my day job too. So I get it.
I'm like peeling dead rats off of carpet, and it was gross. So we were doing that, and let's see, 2016, my husband comes to me with this idea. His dad, Luke's parents, dad and stepmom, live in the Clealum Roslyn area in central Washington. We go there all the time. We had been visiting, you know, for years and years, and it's one of our favorite places. And he goes, hey, I think I found some land that we can develop, and let's go check it out. And I'm like, what? We're not going to build a house? What are you talking about? Well, I dream small. He dreams big. We meet in the middle. This is how things are born in our family. So we go, we find this piece of property downtown Roslyn, which, I mean, gosh, it's like, it's the most beautiful location. And so our first rental was, we developed ourselves. His dad is a builder. And Luke and I have our GC license. We don't actively build for anyone else, but we built it from the ground up, and we intended, I said, okay, I want to do something different with this. We've had, longer term rentals before. And I, again, that's like bordering that property management line that I don't want to cross again. So let's go ahead and let's make this into a vacation rental. I really think that I can do this because I love hosting people. It's my favorite, you know, we're always the ones that open up our houses for any and everything. And, I said, let's just try this out. So let's build this with the intention that this is going to be a vacation rental. At that time, while in the middle of our build, the city of Roslyn imposed a moratorium on anyone applying for vacation rental licenses. And I kind of went, well, okay, the moratorium's expiring by the time we'll be wrapping up our build. So then we'll get in and do our license. Mm-hmm. Well, they were actively researching opportunities to outlaw them during this moratorium, of course. I learned a lot about that. We get to the point where we're finishing this build. I'm going, okay, we have to keep this. I cannot let this house go. This has been my blood, sweat, and tears baby for the past, 18 months or however long. And I said, so I'm combing through all their legal documents, the city's documents that they've posted. And I'm contacting an attorney friend who I knew from my property management days. And I'm going, I think I found a loophole. And I said, can you just verify this? And he said, oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. And the crazy thing is they were meeting, the city of Roslyn was meeting that night at 6 p.m. to vote on this moratorium. And basically, essentially what it was going to do is make our street kind of the boundary between where they could have, so there's like a commercial zone and then there's the residential zone. We were in the residential zone. But if I could get my application in via this loophole that I found, then we were smooth sailing. So I often tell the story like I felt like I was Aaron Brockovich and I found this legal loophole, and essentially the city had let their moratorium lapse and they didn't renew it in time. So there was no moratorium in effect for like 48 hours. And I ran via foot and a stroller with my third child, my newest son, ran all the way to City Hall at like 5:45 p.m. And I slid my application in just as they were, beginning the meeting to vote on this. So that was crazy. And that was our first experience with, licensing our short-term rental. And it's grandfathered in now. And it's been amazing. So that house is called Roslyn Diggs. And where Diggs comes from is because we were just playing with names and thought, well, this is a coal mining town and it's in Roslyn and it's got a cute little, catch to it. It kind of rolls off the tongue nicely. And that's Roslyn Diggs was born.
Perfect. So these are some assumptions that I have about the short-term rental game. Super easy. There's no challenges. You put an ad up on some online platform and you have dozens of people lining up to rent your property. Nobody wants it the same day. Everyone wants it consecutive weekends with enough time off to get the place ready. And they were never impacted by COVID.
You're on a roll today, Scott. This is funny.
When you look at it casually, it looks like it's an extremely lucrative endeavor. And I know it's not. I truly know it's not. And without going into the politics of it, because many counties are, trying to, because there can be negatives. Like you rent Absolutely. Out for a weekend to somebody and they throw a startup kegger with the ping pong table and they're pumping beer and sitting in beanbag chairs at 3 a.m. Nobody likes that in their backyard. But I do think personally, I think it's a really interesting way for a person to go experience something that's not a La Quinta Inn, a cookie cutter, experience. It's a personalized experience that may or may not be for everybody, right? Like your Roslyn Diggs property may not appeal to me, but I might like somebody else's property. So what is it about the short term? Because it does border on property management too, because you're renting. Yes, you are hosting, if you will, but at the same time, there's rental, there's cleaning fees, there's getting the unit ready again, all those things that I think are terrible about property management. You're flipping it after two nights, maybe.
Yeah, it's you've touched on a lot of my hot points at this, just with the last couple sentences. It's not for the faint of heart. I think there is a misperception that it's, people can do this casually, that it's, I love when I hear the term passive income, because when you hear passive income, you are by definition passive about your role in that income. There's no passivity about short-term renting. A lot of people love to start out and try and say, I can manage, I can do this, and that's great. Their burnout will increase significantly in a shorter amount of time. There are a lot of nuances. There are a lot of ways that, you know, there's strategy behind a ton of what we do and how we market, who we're marketing to, who we're allowing into the homes. And it's interesting because this industry is changing so quickly, because it is number one, it's so relative to the market. You know, it's going to be one of the first things to go. I know that people are saying there's a potential recession on our hands. If not, potentially we're already in one. And so we're looking at how are we going to remain afloat, and what are the expectations that we need to adjust as operators and adjust for our clients, and then also for our guests, because there's, you know, I have two clients really that I'm talking to, and the property management side. And I think that this is maybe just a mental shift for me. I don't look at it as property management. I look at it as it's straight hospitality. And there's a huge difference to me in like the soul of where those two things are different. You know, property management is about the bottom line. It's completely a numbers game, and it's completely I was managing a lot of shopping centers, and I'm not giving our new tenants welcome baskets. Actually, I tried and I was laughed at, which is where my heart was like, I really want to welcome people and make them feel like they made a great choice by signing a 5-year lease, you know, with us. But it's just not the same thing. They're a business. We're a business. I'm not renting to businesses. I'm renting to human beings with families who are looking to have a vacation and have, you know, 48 hours of not even less than 48 hours of a wonderful, relaxing stay. So
an experience, a memory building thing.
It is. And I think because I feel like I'm serving a purpose that's more in tune with like where my heartstrings are pulled, I don't view it as much of like as a negative as I would a property management type job. It's more of like, I'm passionate about making people feel at home and comfortable. Therefore, it doesn't feel as worky to me as a property management job.
I think that's a great explanation. And I think it is a mindset shift too, because so Rosalind Diggs, you slid the application in, you literally got it underneath the door just right before the door closed.
Yes.
How, at that point, when you first started, how were you marketing?
So I had started an Instagram account, our process of building. It was really more for friends and family to kind of follow along our journey. And I'm posting, you know, kind of funny little like, whoa, follow me. And I had seen there's actually some amazing cabins up in the Skycomish area. They're super popular. They're really well known. And I was like, wow, this is so cool what they've done. And they've built this following on Instagram. And like the light bulb went off in my head that this is a thing that people do on Instagram. So I thought I could try this. I don't have a background in marketing at all, but you know, I like to write and I like to be personable. So I'm just going to make this me and my personality and my voice. So I started my Instagram account during our build, and then started, you know, hey, we're up on Airbnb. That was the only online travel agency OTA that we were on at the time, and started marketing. Got a lot of friends and family saying, you know, hey, we'd love to come, you know, support your business and stay. And also, can we have a discount?
Of course.
I'm like, well, that's not that supportive, guys, but okay, you know, I'll try it. And we did that. And, you know, it kind of started getting to the point where it was, I love hosting friends and family, but they never read my instructions because they just think that they don't have to.
Gotcha.
So sometimes they're harder to host. But
that seems reasonable.
They're learning. I, you know, we got to the point where we were booking out like crazy because there weren't a lot of houses that were maybe similar to the design aesthetic that we had provided, the quality of photos that we've provided locally. You know, you look at an area and you go, okay, beautiful house, but gosh, they could improve their photos. So we're going to shine. And that's kind of where we fell, where we found ourselves falling. It did help a lot that nobody else could legally rent in our exact neighborhood. So we kind of had a little bit of the market on that. There's some really, really cute traditional B&Bs in our neighborhood, which I actually look at as complimentary to us instead of indirect competition, because they're actually getting a breakfast with their bed. So yeah, I mean, we just realized that we kind of struck gold with having something that was unique. We made it really kind of a thematic design as far as our interiors go with the coal mine theme. You know, we took time and have, you know, some of our handles on our barn doors are actual pickaxes, and we have some local art from the Ellensburg Rodeo, and there was a really cool museum that's no longer in town. They had some cool steer horns, I guess.
Horns.
Steer horns. Okay. So we really kind of made an effort to make sure we were supporting local businesses too, and we were furnishing it, which I think offered a unique aspect as well.
Well, here's a thought I have. So let's talk about Roslyn Digs specifically. So what's the minimum rental term you allow?
2 nights.
And what's the maximum rental term?
28 days.
Okay. What's the typical rental term that it's booked for?
2 to 3 nights.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So twice a week, maybe 3 times a week, somebody has to come in, if it's booked full time, somebody has to come in, refresh the house, right? Are you doing that?
I've always hired cleaning. We've been working with the same cleaner.
My point is, it's good for the economy in the local community, because 100%. That cleaner now has a job that they wouldn't have had before.
Correct. So we started off employing just the cleaner, and then I would come in. I was there all the time, and I'm still in that part of town because I live about an hour and a half away. I was there kind of doing all of our inventory management and making sure that everything, you know, was exactly how I wanted it. I kind of think I know where you're going with this. So I'll tell you that we now employ a whole team of people in the area, which is great.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Yes, a tenant could come in and be obnoxious on any given night, and you, the owner of the property, no one really likes you in that moment. But that probably doesn't happen very often, because I get the feeling you have a good selection process. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think people that do this that have good selection processes, it's just like you mentioned, you had a pit bull.
Yeah.
Okay. Pit bulls have a reputation, but not every pit bull is. They're some of the sweetest dogs I've ever met in my life. They're terrifying if you don't know them. But when you're introduced to them properly, most of the time they're like laying on their backs going, please rub me. I mean, I'm the biggest baby in the world. I will tear your arm off, but you know, no. And so I think that, you know, one of the benefits that we need to think about as because you are a business, is that the business is putting dollars into the local community, and the local community, both directly and indirectly. So I'm going to guess that most of your teams, Kittitas County based. I'm going to guess. That's just a safe guess. And then I'm also going to guess that when people come and stay at Roslyn Digs, that they're going to the Brick, or they're going to the coffee cart and buying a cup of coffee, or they're going to the farmer's market, or they're going to Heritage Distilling's tap or tasting room, or they're doing this. They're going up to Suncadian golfing, or whatever it is they're doing. They're going to Owens Meats and Clay Elm, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't probably be doing that if they weren't staying at this place. So
100%. Well,
yeah.
I know you had kind of glossed over this, and I do think it's an interesting point to sort of, you know, address. And it's not even politics about it, but there are homes that should definitely not be vacation rentals, and there are homes that, if operated well, and in a professional manner and with the intention of enhancing the community, are absolute assets to that community. And I think that our entire business model is the latter. And we are looking at establishing relationships with local businesses. We're actually doing a lot of this summer. We're going to be launching guest add-ons or a concierge service where guests can pull, you know, from local businesses to have a package that's already in their home or in their refrigerator or an experience that we've coordinated for them that supports a local business. And we're really aiming for some of the businesses that are a little bit lesser known. But we're also continuing partnering with, we've already had some great business partnerships with Heritage and Basecamp and Glondo's and Owens and, you know, we're Drew Brew, all these big ones. We're trying to establish ourselves as we're all business partners. Our facility looks, you know, a little different than yours.
Are you going to put an Owens meat vending machine in your house?
Oh my goodness, that would be so cool. The candy store for the carnivore.
It would be amazing, you know. Think about it.
That would be so cool. We should get one of those. I'm gonna call Owens.
It'd be so funny. I would think it'd be so funny, you know.
People rob those. Well, I've seen footage on local Facebook groups about people robbing the vending machines with beef jerky.
I remember when they first came out. I was living on the west side at that time, and you know, I went to college in Ellensburg, so you know, I knew about Owens Meats and all that. And I remember when it first came out, the first one I saw was the one that they put in,
outside their actual store.
No, the one in Ellensburg in Gerald's Books.
Oh,
in Gerald's Books. And I remember going there, and at that time, they were actually selling steaks
in the vending machine.
In the machines. You could buy a $50 ribeye in the vending machine. And I just thought that was, I just chuckled. I just thought, I'm going to buy a steak from a vending machine just so I can say that I did.
What?
And then they've now since they brought down to just, you know, basically smoked meats and cheese and all that, which is still very cool. But
that's so cool.
The idea of buying like a T-bone, but I also could see if it got stuck, you know, how vending machines,
right,
things get
stuck.
Oh, gosh. That I'd be like,
sliding down the glass.
Yeah. That was a $50 steak.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Anyway. No, I think, you're collaborating with local businesses. Mm-hmm. You're all trying to be good stewards of the community that you're involved with.
Yeah.
But I'd like to just shift gears because I want to ask you a negative question.
Okay.
We're not naming names.
Okay.
There's no names involved here. I wouldn't even say Luke's name. Oh, wait, just did. What's the worst thing that a tenant has ever left behind? What's that nightmare story that you're like, I can't believe this happened? And folks, this is an audio program, but you should see your face.
I have off the top of my head. It wasn't a bad thing. It was just shocking. And our team, we were on the funniest group chat I think I've ever been on in my life when this happened. And I don't know, this is not necessarily a PG topic, but
okay,
we had
if you're under 17, please fast forward 3 minutes.
Okay, continue. We had a guest leave a silicone halter top. Well, they were boobs. They left boobs in a drawer.
They left boobs in a drawer. So they put them away.
We unfortunately happened to miss checking said drawer between stays.
Oh, no.
So we had one group stay. They left this item. And then another group stayed, and we have an inspector that goes through between, so it's like between the cleaner and right before the guest arrives, just to make sure everything looks good, everything, you know, if we need to turn on the heat a little bit or whatever. So our inspector's there, she opens this drawer and finds these things. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And she goes, what do I do with this? And I say, well, I feel like somebody might need these because I'm thinking maybe they're a prosthetic, maybe they're, you know, something like that. So I message the previous guest and I say, hi, just so you know, we have a great service where we are able to mail back anything that you've left behind. I'm trying my hardest not to call out because I don't want to embarrass them. And I'm just hoping that they've realized they forgot these. So I reach out and I say, I just want to know, is there anything that you need us to ship? And he says, and I look at this man's profile and he's like this businessman from Chicago who was just getting away into the, and I'm going, wow, this is so unlikely, but hey, who knows? And he says, I don't think I left anything. Did you find something that I need to know about? And so I say, well, we did find a silicon body part. And he says, oh, I saw that when I was there. And I thought that was strange, but they're not mine. They belong to somebody else. I think that if embarrassment could be felt via internet, yeah. I shook all those waves that day. I was mortified, but then I felt like I was accusing him of leaving something that, again, was very unlikely that they were his, but I didn't know. And then I went back to the previous guest who then, yes, they belonged to them. But it was... So it wasn't a bad thing. It was just a really great lesson for my team that we all need to check all the drawers. I've actually heard horror stories of things people have left in drawers. Fortunately, we have not experienced them.
I don't know what episode this is going to be. It'll be at least in the 190s, maybe in the early 200s. Okay, so let's just say 200.
Okay.
That is the single best story I've heard. When I ask people what's gone wrong, that is the single best story, hands down, on so many levels. So
I have a photo.
You win. We'll use that in our marketing. We'll just use that in our marketing for this episode. That story works on so many levels. First off, mm-hmm. It's a very odd item to be left behind.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, your team missed it not once, but twice.
Yeah.
Which means this middle guest thought it was odds. So you have to wonder what's running through their heads.
I can't believe he never said anything.
Oh my gosh.
That is the craziest. So our awesome. Like I said, our group text, I mean, after we figured out that it was not a prosthetic or something that was, you know, I was crying, laughing so hard at just this mishap of, trying to figure out who they belong to. And again, I mean, we've had the very best guests. I feel like we just have such respectful people and they're all in line. I mean, we've had a few people that have left it kind of trashed or broken things. We had someone, lead a trail of puke up some stairs once that required some carpet cleaning magic. But
did you send the bill to Heritage? Because yeah. Or the brick? All right. So the other question. And I could go this two different ways with this question, but okay. I'm curious. So I'm going to ask two questions, I guess. Part A of the question is, what amenity is the most popular with the guests?
And okay.
The opposite of that question is there something that guests ask for that they keep asking for over and over? I'll for example, oversimplify. We'd really like a coffee maker in here. How come you don't have a coffee maker? So what's the number one amenity that guests like? And what, if anything, have they asked for that you might have provided since then, but that people have been asking for?
Okay. Number one amenity, I'm going to say, I'm assuming this because I think it's probably the top filtered search when they're searching on an OTA, is a hot tub, having a spa hot tub, which all of our houses in, with the exception of one, have hot tubs. And those are a whole thing in and of itself to operate, but we have an amazing team, who Northwest Luxury Spas, they're actually in Ellensburg as well. Okay. They are so awesome, and they go in between each stay. Hot tubs have a bad reputation because people mistreat them and don't clean them appropriately. But if you get on a good schedule, they're a key essential thing that people love. Okay. So that's our probably our most popular amenity, aside also from being pet friendly. We're in the Pacific Northwest. I think there's more pets than kids. So
that's true in our household.
Yeah. we have three kids and two pets, so we're almost even. So being pet friendly is another asked for amenity or a sought out amenity. And then I would say something people have asked for, who the coffee thing is definitely, that's a whole, you know, their strategy behind the coffee that we leave or that we provide the types of makers. We've actually had somebody, maybe only two or three people have asked for cream and sugar, which is funny because
you should not rent to them. You should not rent to them.
Hey now.
That's an unreasonable ask by a short-term tenant. I'm sorry. I would not rent to them.
You know, it's funny because it's like a catch 22 with food that you leave. Mm-hmm. I don't ever leave things in the refrigerator, even condiments, just because I feel like the impression is, ew, this was someone else's. Even if it's just a bottle of ketchup, for whatever reason, it's gross, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
But some people really want that stuff left. So it's kind of like, I can't please them all. But with the sugar, I leave sugar. Like if there's thing of sugar in the thing, I'll leave. But I have more, you know, you can get around it by leaving. Now we're stocking our houses with the little creamers that can be left that don't need to be refrigerated. So we have those in the houses.
I still wouldn't rent to them.
We're really upping our amenity game lately. So it's been kind of fun to, for me, it's like, I didn't expect that to be provided. And it is. That's cool. You know,
do people ask for like board games or books?
Yeah.
Or?
Books, not as much. We do leave some in some of the houses. Roslyn Diggs being the first one, I thought that would be huge. So I have like a whole library. I don't even know that they're, and it's kind of like a take and leave whatever you want.
Right. Yeah.
Games are huge. Like people love board games on vacation, especially when they're like a staycation type, you know, couple hour drive.
Right.
Let's see. Game rooms are a big one that we're finding help us, you know, if we can convert a garage or a room in the house to like have a pop a shot and a foosball table or ping pong. So that's another big one, especially with
beanbag chairs too.
Oh yeah. Beanbag chairs. We do have some good beanbag chairs. I mean, especially with Pacific Northwest unpredictable weather in those like spring, fall months, it's nice to have stuff to do indoors that you don't have to leave the house for.
So January through July and then September through November.
Well, you know, the east of the mountains is not nearly as bad as the west.
This year it has been.
I know. Finally, getting good weather just like this weekend.
We had a foot of snow on April 13th. You know,
don't talk I asked to me
for
about snow.
My birthday is April 12th. I asked for snow on my birthday as a joke. I got a little bit of snow, and then the next day it was a foot.
Be careful what you ask for. This year was record-breaking snowfall for the winter, which was absolutely devastating for our whole entire operation. It was awful. So that was a first.
So we spent a lot of time on Roslyn, the Roslyn project. How many homes do you have now?
Okay. So we kind of divide up our collection, between Diggs houses, which are houses that my husband Luke and I, either own outright or have a partnerships with.
Okay.
So those are any house that ends in Diggs. So there's Roslyn Diggs, Sun Country Diggs, Shin Diggs, Moonshine Diggs. And so
does Moonshine Diggs have like a working still in it so that,
I wish. No, Moonshine Diggs, that name came because it's on Moonshine Lane.
Okay.
So right, it was like, oh, come on. This is like perfect. And it's the cool, it's probably our most popular house. It's an A-frame, which everyone loves.
And where's that at?
It's on the lake, or it's in a neighborhood with lake access in Ronald.
Okay.
Yeah, right on Lake Cleellum. Super cool house. It's a 68 A-frame that we converted and made super cool and retro looking still. And nice. Yeah, did a full remodel. So we've got 6 active digs houses. I haven't announced it yet, but I'm comfortable doing it here. We're bringing on our 7th in Arizona. So that'll be our second property in Arizona. And that's coming. Okay. I was actually just in Arizona for 3 weeks working on getting it set up. So hopefully we'll launch early fall. Then we've got now 6 houses that are co-hosted. So that I operate for other people. And then we're bringing on a 7th in the summer.
So I own the house.
Mm-hmm. We manage the house for you.
And you provide the... Okay.
Yep, the operations.
All right.
So that makes a total of, by the end of the summer, at least 14. And we've got a couple proposals out. So we're growing up a little bit.
So you are also then, let's say, a complementary business besides actually owning and operating. You are offering co-management with people. And then do you offer consulting to help people who are thinking about getting into this industry?
Yes. Yep. So we basically have like a few kind of levels of service offerings. One is the co-hosting, which is a full-blown, it's basically everything but maintenance that we, just because we don't have in-house maintenance right now, we're growing and I'd like to get there at some point, but we're focusing on just making quality experiences and we can't do that if we're looking at, you know, spreading our team too thin. So that's one offering. And then we do consulting for people that are either looking to get in or maybe they're wanting to consult with both Luke and myself about the investment side of it and the numbers. Mm-hmm. And so we offer that kind of consulting. We do branding consulting, whether you're going to brand the house we're co-hosting for you or you're wanting to do it on your own. And then we also do interior design consulting as well as full-blown interior design services.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And this all came about from a degree in European studies and Spanish.
Naturally. I mean, pretty much a career
path.
It's
such a cool story. It's such a cool story. I love talking to people and hearing their journeys, even just because, you know.
It's funny though, like how everything, I mean, I don't believe that there anything happens by accident. I think there's, you know, definitely a plan for everyone's journeys and their life. And all these little unlikely jobs that I had or duties that I had to perform, all of them have beautifully come together to help me be equipped to operate my own business. You know, the scrappiness that I learned at my tech startup and even just the tech stack that I'm dealing with now, I would not have been equipped had I not been in that tech industry. The property management side and learning how to operate budgets for other people and give them, you know, reporting and all of that. So it's pretty funny how things happen.
So I just clicked on book now on the webpage in the header. And it takes me to Hostfully, which is nothing I've ever heard of before.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at your properties. And so I should have done this before we started talking, but there's some, I mean, I will agree. It's obvious to me. The photography is done the way that a real estate broker who is used to positioning a property or exposure is done versus their iPhone out with their thumb partially over the lens in slightly crooked.
It's painful.
It really is painful.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, which one am I looking at? Lakeview Mountain Escape, amazing views of Lake Cleellum.
Mm-hmm. That was my first ever co-hosted house. And actually, I met the owner of that house through Heritage Distilling, through networking with them. She liked our hats that we were giving our guests. And I said, oh, you like the hats? I'll just go get you one. And I went home and grabbed her a hat and came back and gave her a hat. And we've been friends ever since. And she asked me to run her family cabin.
Wow. I wish my family had a cabin like this.
It's a beautiful cabin.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It really truly is. And the attention to detail in the photography.
Yes.
You're painting a very good picture of, for me, I'm on the coffee shot right now and I'm looking at this and I approve of your coffee. Wow. I like that. You even go so far. I got to give you kudos here. And it's not doing it now, but I moused over the Keurig and it pops up with a little tooltip that says, you know, coffee maker and Keurig coffee. The fact that you took the time to add those little nuanced details mm-hmm. that matter so much. And I'm going to stop looking at this because I'm jealous. So I encourage everybody to go, and we're going to put links in the show notes so people can check this out. But we do need to wrap this up because I know you've got things to do. But I have a couple questions that aren't related to digs.
Okay.
Number one, coffee.
Yes.
We've already assumed that you're cream and sugar, which yeah, that's okay. But where do you like to go for coffee?
My favorite place, I'm just going to stick within the Clio Lim Roslyn area.
Okay. Sure.
I love Pioneer Coffee, Pioneer Roasters. Okay. They mm-hmm. roast their own. They're also yep. in North Bend.
Yes, they are.
Depending on the house, each house has its own personality, so they call for different things. So sure. depending on the type of coffee maker we have, Pioneer has wholesale sales. So I buy my beans and my grounds mm-hmm. from them
okay.
for the houses. Okay. Yeah. I love, right. and I do like, Basecamp has great coffee as well. Okay. But from a wholesale bean purchasing, I like Pioneer. Right.
So when you're not running your short-term rental empire, what do you and the family like to do for fun and recreation?
We are huge pickleball people, which is...
Did you know that it's the official sport of the state of Washington?
I did. Very proud of that. Okay. We actually, we have a pickleball court in our backyard, and so we're constantly playing. Okay. We love pickleball. It's really hard to sometimes distinguish between work and life because both of us are in real estate. So we're constantly doing things that are real estate oriented. Mm-hmm. We have a very, really tight group of friends that all of our kids are the same age. We hang out, we go golfing together. We like to cook.
Where's
together.
The good golf? Where do you guys like to go golfing?
Well, on the west side of the mountains, we golf at Fairwood.
Okay.
My kids really enjoy that. They actually are on golf team there. So we do that.
Oh, cool.
Sun right. Country Golf Course is great. I love that golf course. It's not as daunting as Suncadia, you know, and it's a lot cheaper.
yes, it is.
And they're coming up on they've got a new restaurant. So I actually haven't been there yet. I need to go.
Okay.
I am not a very great golfer. I am there for driving the cart and hitting those mm-hmm. long drives, not always straight, but my kids are really into Perfect. It. So it's been really fun as a family.
Awesome. All right. Last question.
Okay.
What didn't I ask you that I should have asked you?
Ooh. I would say... there's so much that we could have talked about, which I'm kind of glad we didn't because I talk about this all the time, but you know, just kind of where this is heading, where this industry is heading, and what makes us different operators than, you know, the Vacasas and the huge, you know, giant conglomerates that run that have been running this industry forever. Mm-hmm. And are you want me to answer that question?
Actually, I'm going to retract that question and ask you a couple of other ones.
Okay.
I'd like you to put on your consumer hat.
Okay.
What are things that people that are interested in looking at a short-term rental? They want to go somewhere for 2, 3, 4 days and they want to stay, you know, in a cabin in the woods. What should the consumer be looking for? Is there any telltale signs of things that might make it a disappointing experience?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say really read through the comments that, you know, because a good operator takes time to almost tell a little bit of a story. You don't want it to be too long. You don't want it to bore somebody, but read through the captions. Like you had kind of pointed out, those photos have captions and they're there for a reason. And I like to kind of walk my guests as they're viewing the property through the property. It's almost like a virtual tour, right? Look for that. Obviously, if you're booking on like a big OTA, the super host or the premier host status, those are there for a reason and they make a big difference. I would say look at the details, things to me, like the first thing that ever stuck out, before I became an operator, before I even wanted, I had a friend who put their house on Airbnb for rent. And I remember thinking, they only have two pillows on a king bed. What? Who sleeps with one pillow? Like, I can't trust somebody who sleeps with one pillow. What? So in my head,
it's like they're using cream and sugar in their coffee.
It's like they're, come on. I use creamer and I'm proud. I'm not going to apologize for that. those kinds of things, it's like the thought out, you know, give 4 to 6 pillows on a king bed. I'm like a pillow crazed person and have extras. And are you providing the coffees? And are you, you know, we like to provide, we know people forget things. So, you know, we put USB plugs where we can or provide cords for charging and things like that. It's in the details. And I think people can, you know, gloss over and look at maybe this enormous property. You get a lot of huge properties, in neighborhoods that are enormous and can sleep 24 people, but then you get there and there's 4 towels or, you know, whatever. So it's like the size of the property doesn't always make a difference on the experience.
All right. So let's ask that same question, but from the operator side, what do you think operators are overlooking that they shouldn't overlook? Maybe it's including towels and pillows, but
yeah,
if you were consulting, let's say I called you up and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. I've got a cabin, blah, 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 blah. What's a nugget of advice that you would offer somebody who's thinking about getting into this?
I would say having that, and this is something that I do talk to any prospective client who wants me to co-host their home. I have to make sure that we're in alignment with how we're viewing the guest, as they are the most important person, you know, in our business. Because if we don't have guests, we don't have a business. So are we providing the moments of delight, the ahas, the, oh, they thought of me when they left this charging cord or the cream and sugar. And if it's like, you know, no, I don't want to spend $35 on a welcome gift in my house that's renting for $800 a night, then we're probably not in alignment with how we're viewing this experience. Because in my head, $30 to $35 is the very bottom line of what we should be providing someone who's choosing to spend a lot of money to live, you know, to experience your home. So I'd say just remember that this is hospitality, and there are a lot of other operators who are willing to roll out the red carpet. And how can we do that? You know, of course we have to look at the bottom line, but that will come after providing the most amazing experience. You'll get the loyalty and you'll get the repeat and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this has been a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's an interesting overlap to what I do on my quote unquote day job. And you're in, you know, the Clayelm Roslyn area. It's beautiful there. It's beautiful. Where in Arizona? Where are the?
Both houses are in Mesa. Okay. And we're actively looking at bringing on more in the area. So anywhere in the greater Phoenix area is kind of our niche right now.
Nice. Okay. And that'll be a nice draw for like spring training baseball.
Yes. You know, and we've got the Super Bowl coming up. Like that. That's Super Bowl Waste Management are in the same week this year.
See, I'm a Seahawks fan. That's not going to matter for a few years.
Now that everyone's gone, gracious.
Yeah, it's just not going to matter. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you. I will put links so people can follow along with what you're doing, and I encourage them to check you out.
Yeah.
But why don't you say this? Where can people find you online? What's your Instagram handle?
Yep.
website?
Our Instagram is thedigs.co. So thedigs.co. Facebook is just digsco. And then our website, I think you'll link, is thedigs-co.com. So digs-co. And it's, yep. It's oftentimes people spell it with two G's. It's one G, D-I-G-S.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott. I love your guys' program, and I love, you know, your publications, and you guys are doing a big service for Washington natives, so, and non-natives.
You try.
Like me.
And you got two more years. You'll be there.
You know what? It's great for people like me who weren't born here. So I love what you guys do, and you guys have been great to partner with in the past too.
Join us next time for another episode of the Exploring Washington State Podcast.